I'm Mark Evanier. Welcome to a panel we've been looking forward to for some time. We used to have this convention. We used to run around and applaud Jack Kirby like crazy. We don't have Jack here, but we have a lot of his friends and family. I'd like you to meet Kirby's friends and family, folks. The friends are me and Mike. The rest are all related. This is Jillian Kirby. That's Lisa Kirby. That's Mike Thibodeau. That's Tracy Kirby. And that's Jeremy Kirby. We're going to talk about the man we are all privileged to know or to have in our world. A lot of you feel close to the Kirby family, I know. If Mike Royer were here, and he may still join us, he would talk about the feeling of extended family. When I went to work for Jack in 1969, well, I met him in 69, I went to work for him in 1970 with a fellow named Steve Sherman, who couldn't be here. And, you know, Roz was making us sandwiches, we were jumping in the pool, we were, at one point, Lisa had a horse in the back of the house, and Jack would, like, every so often at 2 o'clock, he'd say, time to go shovel out the stables, Mark. And he'd get up to go out to shovel out the stables. You remember this, Lisa, at all?
Oh, yeah. And he, I was and happy I would, about and, it. And are you kidding? Say, I didn't have to do it.
Yeah. And I would say, why don't you let me do that, Jack? Because I figured the one thing I could do better than Jack was to shovel out horseshit. And he'd go, no, Mark, this is honest work. And he would go in and he would just, and Jack was like very, much stronger than I was, very strong man. And he would start shoveling horseshit and throwing it in the canyon downward, hoping he'd hit one of the motorcyclists who could drive into the canyon with the noise. And I think with every one of those shovels, he was thinking of somebody he hated and imagined flinging the shit at them. Anyway, he was an amazing man, and I want to ask everybody a little bit about the effect. I want to ask Lisa first.
Okay. Thanks.
Lisa, how old were you when you figured out what your father did for a living?
30.
Get closer to the mic,
no,
please.
About 35. to me, I get this question a lot. He was my dad. I mean, that's what he did for a living. Is most you get, you know, with your parents, you know what they do for a living, and that's what he did for a living. I mean, I really didn't realize till I was older how much he did and the effect it had to the public and entertaining people. I think he was just always my father. So especially as a teenager, I don't think you really even appreciate rolling your eyes at your parents and, oh no, he's telling me that story again. But, you know, and as you get older, you're like, wow, you know, I should have listened more or I should have paid attention more. So, yeah, it took a while, but now it's like I said, I am overwhelmed. I'm overwhelmed sitting here. So it's a pretty amazing thing. And I know I'm very proud of him, and I think everybody else is very proud of his accomplishments as well. So
pull the mic a little closer.
Okay.
Say that one more time.
I have to go through that again?
No,
okay.
Was there
Thank
one
you.
Story you heard so many times you could hear it in your sleep? Was there one anecdote you can tell you over and over and over again?
Gosh, you know, I can't think of something, you know, that
was quickly. Was it a World War II story?
The World War II story? I can't think of it. Is anybody here can think of it?
I always remember the story he'd always tell about finding a dog.
Oh, that's the one.
Where they found a lone dog after they kind of went into a town that was pretty much broken down and destroyed, and they found this lone dog walking around, and that to him was a very vivid memory that he carried with him for a long time, that he'd always talk about. And then also, the Nazis usually multiplied over the years. Different stories.
That's true.
So from 5 Nazis to 10 Nazis to 20 Nazis that he'd be fighting, which I always thought was pretty cool.
Lisa, did you ever get any reaction from kids at school who knew what your father did?
Definitely. Even growing up, I was just a really shy kid. I was quiet. I was one of those people that just sat and didn't talk very much, and it was hard for me to make friends. Now I talk a lot, so it's a lot different. But back then, he would come to my classroom And he'd do, you know, draw for the kids. He'd ask, you know, what letter does your name start with? And he'd put a big A on the drawing pad and make a superhero out of it. So somewhere there's, hopefully those people still have their drawings. But, yeah, and then, you know, it really broke the ice for me. And then, you know, I'd have birthday parties and all these people would come because, you know, I owe it to him. He kind of, he got me in the group. So, and then as I grew older, I was a preschool teacher for quite a long time, and then he would come to my class and do the same thing. So it was really neat to see it all go full circle. So yeah, he was great about doing that.
Jillian, what's the reaction you get when people find out you're related to Jack Kirby?
Almost the same. I know a lot of kids, I guess my age, especially with the popularization of his characters in the mainstream movies and everything today, now they're kind of becoming more and more aware of who he is, as especially with people my age group who didn't really like grow up with him as maybe people did when he was like first co-creating the characters. But now kind of like people are more aware and they like are kind of aware of his contribution to the industry and the implications that it's been with his characters. Kind of they're everywhere now, and it's crazy. And I know even one of my friend's brothers, who is like even younger than me, and him and his friend group were like freaking out when they realized, like, oh wait, your friend's related to Jack Kirby, like this is amazing. And so it's still kind of like coming back to me now, and kind of almost as like an odd person out on this panel. My grandfather passed away in 1994, and I was born in 1995, so I never had a chance to know him personally. So even here and just hearing kind of all my like relatives like stories about him, and even like fans have like approached me recently, like yesterday at the con, and they're like, oh, I met your grandfather, he was a huge inspiration to me. And that's just kind of amazing to hear, and amazing to hear like all of his impact on people kind of on all ages too.
Did Neil, when you were very young, sit you down, me and your father, and say, let me tell you about grandpa?
Yes, I think there was one of those moments. It was definitely when I was in elementary school, and I was not aware of kind of how big of a deal it was. I remember in, I knew enough by in third grade, we had to do like a hero report, and I did it on my grandfather. So I was had this whole like 20-minute long presentation that I did in front of like my classroom of like 8-year-olds or whatever age we were in third grade, of like styrofoam poster boards, and I printed out, I think he used the color printer, and printed out a bunch of comic book covers, and kind of was trying to like teach my peers about like what my grandfather did, and like hopefully that is, would be great if it was still with them today. But
some kid whose father like worked for CVS Pharmacy had to get up and follow you and say, well, you know, my grandfather didn't create multi-million dollar characters, and really, all right. Tracy, how conscious, when were you first conscious of Jack, of what he did? Like, when did you understand what he meant to people?
I think at a pretty early age, because honestly, I mean, I've been going to this Comic-Con since, I think my mom, well, I was born in May, and it's summer, so I think I was about a couple months old. And
there's a photo in the program, I saw that.
That was
Jack
cute.
And Tracy, you must have been about four at that.
Yeah.
Photo.
Yeah, so I mean, honestly, as like a little girl, you know, for me, you know, and I'm experiencing it right now with my own children, dragging them around to some panels, and they're bored and not really understanding what's going on, and oh, I just want to get to Tokidoki, Mom, let's go. And I was kind of like that, I think, as a little child, but probably I'd say 10 and moving on into like the early teenage years, and then really going to the Comic-Cons, I think for me, it really hit me how hard people meant to him. And even though I wasn't, you know, growing up, I understood his characters, and I, you know, I spent so much time hanging out with him in his studio, and I just loved looking at all the stuff he would draw and create, and all the stories that he would tell me and my brother growing up. And to me, it was just grandpa stories. And then going to the comic conventions, it was, oh, wow, this really means a lot. It's not just me who is actually enjoying all this. This is a lot of other people out there. So it was definitely the early years of the comic book conventions and the award ceremonies that, and just, yeah, just following him around and seeing fans just really approach him.
Jeremy, when did you figure out who he was?
Mine was kind of twofold. So I grew up in basically the early 80s. So for me, a lot of my grandfather's stuff was some of the awesome cartoons, the Ruby Spears that he had worked on. So everything through like Mr. T and all of that type of stuff, and you know, a few of the other Thundar, of course, the Barbarian. You know, so all those amazing things, and was getting to actually journey with him to the Ruby Spears offices. And being able to experience that, and that was one. And then of course, just I knew there was kind of something special about my grandfather when you're 4 or 5 years old, and you want to kind of play, you know, like cops and robbers, and you're at their house, and they're like, okay, you know, let's play an imaginary game, let's play cops and robbers. And your grandfather's like, yeah, that's awesome, but instead of like cops and robbers, how about we play like intergalactic spaceman and robbers. Except the robbers live on a planet that's too close to the sun, so it's 1/3 the gravity of Earth, and we have to. And I'm just like, I just want to shoot people. You know, like, what are you doing here? So that would be like when I realized that there was something, you know, kind of special about my grandfather. Obviously, that would be it. So.
He did that with everything people gave him. He always took everybody's idea and added 33 things to it.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I one time took back an idea I had for a comic book, and he went, that's great, and now we did. And he started telling me how we expanded and add characters to it, and I thought, like, did I tell him this idea 6 months ago, and he spent all the time working on it? Because he had all these add-ons instantly in his head. And this is one of the reasons, things that convinced, when I first met Jack, he told me, you know, I came up with all the ideas for everything. And then I thought, well, you know, everybody would say that. And then I started hearing all the ideas he had, and I started believing him. And then I started meeting people he'd worked with, like Steve Ditko and Don Hatcher. They said, yeah, Jack had all the ideas for everything. And I was just acting like it's all true. I never once caught Jack lying to me. I caught him being confused a lot, being saying Captain Marvel and not Captain America, but I never, ever thought he told me something that wasn't true. Did you find that with him? Was he as honest with you as he was with me?
You know, I think so. I mean, he was just such a sweet man. I can't picture him lying or at all to anybody. Like I said, he may embellish, possibly, or be confused, but I don't think he would lie about anything.
But he embellished the way a writer tries to make a story better.
Right, in that
himself
way.
Look better.
No, that's true. Better. It was to make his story more alive and interesting. And he was constantly thinking. I mean, he didn't even drive a car. My mother drove him because he knew he would, you know, he'd end up off the road somewhere because he couldn't keep his mind on what he was doing. So, he was constantly thinking of stories. And
yeah, Jack behind the wheel of the car is a fright.
Yeah, that would, you would not want my dad driving.
Mike?
Yes.
Tell the mic that one more towards your mouth and tell us how Jack came into your life.
No, I came into his life.
Okay.
Actually, I met him at a convention in 71 in L.A. And he, we were talking to him. I actually bought a piece of artwork from him at that point. I'm sorry, I'm talking to you.
No, talking to you. Answer my question, look at that.
Actually, it wasn't a piece of artwork. It was a drawing that was inside a comic book. And bought some comics from him, talked to him for a while, and I just wanted to know if I could have lunch with him at some point. And he said, yeah, come on over to the house. And I just couldn't believe that. And I said, oh, can I get your phone number? And then he says, it's in the phone book. And Jack Kirby puts his name, his phone number in the phone book. Anyway, call him up, and he had me over. And they were so kind. They were just so nice. And they invited me up again and again. And then I just started calling, and I went up there at least once or twice a week.
Now, at what point, when you first met him, did you say, I want to be an artist?
I'm sure I mentioned that to him.
And did you show him any of your work?
A few years later, I started showing him stuff.
So he, without even seeing artwork by you, he took an interest in you.
was a, yes.
Okay, and then as you started bringing him artwork, what was his reaction to it?
He didn't like it. he would suggest things I could improve, but very kindly. He was a very, you know, he would never put you down. He probably should have. But I just kept working on it, and I, you know, working at it all the time. And then one day he did say, it looks pretty good. You want to ink something for me? Just a trial run to ink something. So it was a big surfer piece, which to this day I regret inking over the pencils. I ruined it. But he was so cool about it.
Did he think you ruined it?
He didn't say it. But you know, Jack, he said, great job.
Did he then ask you to do something else right after that?
No, it was about two years later.
But he gave you another chance.
He did.
And how did you feel when you were now making something of his that was going to be published?
Oh, like Captain Victory.
Yes.
Scared the hell out of me. I didn't want to touch it. I remember looking at the page for hours and not wanting to touch it. And I asked him if I should do it over a light table. You know, Jack, no, just get it done. Go do it. I just remember it took a long time. And the first couple of pages I did, I remember him telling me to go look at Mike Royer's work. Sorry he's not here, but... that's what he would constantly say. And then I believe you introduced him to Royer, is that right?
Yeah, well, sort of, yeah. Alex Toth actually introduced Jeff.
Why, weren't you responsible for Royer inking him?
I was the one who talked Jack into getting rid of you-know-who.
Yes.
And getting it to Mike. It wasn't the people who talked to him. But I knew Mike before Jack, I knew Mike years before he even met Jack. But Alex Toth would have sent him through that Marvel Mania stuff.
Wait. So are you not responsible for him inking?
I am one of the people responsible for Mike inking.
Okay. Then I'm still angry at you because he would always compare everything to Royer. And he's like, who introduced you to him? You know?
If Mike had inked him, you wouldn't have inked him.
That's a good point.
Anyway.
I like you.
Okay.
Can I bring up something real quick off the subject?
Yeah,
she was saying something, and it made me remember something that had happened to me. Lisa was saying that, you know, it was just Dad, and she was so used to him, he wasn't, you know, what he was. It reminded me that when I was first looking for Jack, he wanted to just draw the whole book and give it to me, but he was only a half hour away, and I asked Jack if I could, you know, do it piecemeal. You know, draw two or three pages, I'll drive up and get you, and I got... get the pages and go. Jack liked donuts. And he would make fresh donuts at 2 in the morning down the street from him. So I used to drive up there, get him, if as long as Roz was sleeping, we could go do this, because she wouldn't let him do this. There was one night I picked him up and we drove down there and I had the pages with me. We went into the donut shop. You wouldn't do that today with the original art, but we were sitting there reading donuts, and I was going over it, asking him how he would like something inked, and I remember him talking about it. I see a group of people behind us, young kids, they had to be college kids, and one of them just kept looking over. He finally gets up, walks over, and he's standing there, and he says, are those Jack Kirby pencils? And I'm sitting there thinking right away, this is a civilian, how does he know that? Anyway, I start talking to him, and he's in shock that this is really Jack Kirby's work. And I finally say, I'd like to introduce you to Jack. And the thing was, his eyes lit up. He stepped back, but his eyes were really lit up to the point where he almost fell down. And when he finally got back to the table, he asked Jack if he could shake his hand, and he was just talking about, you're the greatest artist in the world. He says, I have all your comics. He's going on. And again, it was a civilian saying this. So I said to him, I realized when we were driving home, the guy calls everybody over. And they're all standing there. But his speech that he gave to these people was pretty incredible. And I realized when she was talking about Jack, just, you know, Jack told so many war stories. You get to the point, you kind of glaze over. And It just, on the drive home, I remember realizing, this is that giant that I remember. You know, sometimes you forget as time goes on what a giant this person is. And I remember, I hadn't been drinking either, but I said, Jack, man, I love you. I just remember that when you were saying
that. That's
awesome,
Nick. I like
that's
that.
A great story.
That's a great story. Good advice.
Okay,
I'll
tell a quick story here. I worked on a TV show for a year called Welcome Back, Cotter. It's a TV show that was on ABC. And Lisa came to the set one time. Remember? You were
this Welcome Back, Cotter.
Yeah, did you come?
I don't know if that was me. I think I would have remembered that.
I think it was you.
I'm old. I can't remember last week.
You and a couple of your friends came to the set with the table. And I introduced
you. It must have been me because they're all too young.
Yeah,
so.
No, I introduced you to John Travolta and all the people on that show. And I introduced, there's a black guy that's sharing, Larry Hilton Jacobs. And I introduced him to Jack and Roz and everybody there. They stayed for after the tape, and we had stuff we taped after the studio audience left, and introduced them. And we had in the show, the episode was an episode that George Kennedy was supposed to guest star in. At the last minute, he dropped out, and they grabbed an actor named Scott Brady, who was an old Western actor. He filled in for George Kennedy last minute. So we're at this taping, and Roz was so excited to meet John Travolta and Gabe Kaplan and all these people. And Jack was all excited because he met Scott Brady. And Scott Brady was an old Republic serials. So the next day, Larry Hilton Jacobs comes up to me in the rehearsals, and he says, hey, Mark, you're in the comic books, aren't you? And I said, yeah. And he says, did you ever know the character of the Silver Surfer? And I said, sure. And he said, that was a great guy. I said, well, you met the guy last night who created the Silver Surfer. And Larry said, that was the Jack Kirby? I said, yeah. The guy who drew this, that little guy was Jack Kirby. And I said, yeah. He says, I thought it was just some guy named Jack Kirby. I said, anyway. Thank you, Mike. That's a great story.
I like yours better.
Okay, well.
You guys have good stories.
Well, mine's got some stars in it, okay? Jillian, tell us a little bit about the project you're doing now.
Sure.
I want to make sure we have time to get all that in.
I founded a charity campaign back in 2012 called Kirby for Heroes, and at the time, as I said, I didn't have kind of that personal connection with my grandfather, just for family stories and kind of similar to how fans inherited, but through my father Neil kind of also told me all of these stories about my grandfather, and I wanted a way to kind of further connect with him myself. So say, okay, well, from what I can gather through hearing all these stories, he was very generous and charitable person, and I thought, okay, I could maybe give back somehow to the comic book industry, kind of in tribute to my grandfather. So I founded Kirby for Heroes in 2012 to raise money for a charity called the Hero Initiative, which kind of gives back to members of the comic book industry and provides them with medical and financial assistance. And so every year around August 28th, my grandfather's birthday, comic book stores across the country and individuals can donate to the Hero Initiative, or the stores throw kind of birthday parties in honor of my grandfather and then donate a percentage of sales to the Hero Initiative as a part of the Kirby for Heroes campaign. And so when I started in 2012, I was 16. I didn't know what I was doing, and I didn't know how to try to make a big campaign on a national or international level, or try to get people involved. But through the guidance of both my parents, Connie and Neil, and Jim McLaughlin at the Hero Initiative, I've kind of, the campaign has grown every year, and there's comic book retailers across the country, and even in Brazil and France and I think Argentina. It's crazy how much it's grown. And I think we've gone from raising the first year is we raised $5,000, and now we've raised over $70,000 so far for the Hero Initiative. And the campaign will continue this summer in honor, especially of my grandfather's centennial in August. So my goal is to total $100,000 raised for the Hero Initiative in honor of his 100th birthday. So that'd be my goal for this summer. So yeah, check out the campaign, guys.
That's great. What is the reaction you get where people think, oh, Jack Kirby, I'm going to open my wallet? I mean, there's a lot of people who just want to give because of Jack's name. Do you have any experience where realizing, I guess the question I'm asking here is what's the response you get from people when they hear the name Kirby in conjunction with this?
Yeah, they're like kind of like very like odd, and they're like, oh, well, this is something. Either at first they didn't know kind of how to give back to the comic book industry if they were either used to be in it or just are like not in the comic book industry, and they're like, oh, well, this is like part of like my childhood, or I grew up on this, and it like has like meant so much to me personally, and they're just like, oh, they think this is like a great way to give back, and especially if they were inspired by my grandfather, like, oh, to do something like in honor of Jack Kirby, who had like meant so much to me, and maybe either they had met him or they hadn't met him, or just to kind of contribute on behalf of him, and especially to a charity that is basically helping directly members of the comic book industry, kind of to the industry that has given us so much enjoyment. And people like you said, really want to just give back to that if it meant so much to them personally.
Jeremy, tell us, well, I wanted to hear a little more about the reaction you get. People try to talk to you about Jack's characters. Mm-hmm. What did they say to you? I mean, what's the character people mention most to you, I guess?
Probably Captain America, you know, that I would say most likely. And, people just, you know, when you let them know, you know, who your grandfather is, they want, a lot of them never got a chance to meet him. So it's almost like, you almost become like a vessel for them to be able to get a feeling of maybe someone that meant so much to them, you know, like their childhood. You know, they grew up on these characters, whether it be Captain America or Fantastic Four or New Gods, any of those, and to be able, it's just they always want to, they actually less so about the characters and more so about the man, you know, because they can see the superheroes all over the big screen, they can see them in their favorite comics, but what they really want to know is, you know, about my grandfather, what type of person he was, you know, what did he do, what did he believe in, and that's what I like talking about more so is the type of person he was, who is someone that would, you know, if you stopped him here at Comic-Con, and, you know, when I was a kid, I'd walk the floors with him, he would sit there and talk to you almost to a fault, where my grandmother would have to grab him or Mark would have to get him to the next panel or whatnot, but he literally had this genuine kind of love for everyone, and if you ever got a chance to talk to him, you would see it in the way that he talked to you, the way that he'd treat every person. And that's really when people talk to me, it's really about just trying to, you know, figure out more about the man. I love being able to kind of share with you guys anecdotes and some stories that I have, because he really was that good of a person. Like, if you've never had a chance to meet him, like, he's just the embodiment, I guess, of warmth to people that...
What's a story you tell people?
I mean, I have a lot of them every time from, you know... Basically, I guess Comic-Con related is every year we would drive down. It was, you know, my grandmother, myself, my grandfather, and Julie Schwartz, you know, in the car. And being able to come down and listen to the, you know, to him and Julie just kind of conventioning over everything. You know what I'm saying? They're just... It's almost like they're just gossiping back and forth, and it was so neat to see these two kind of pillars of the comics community be able to talk about their past, and you know, it's why I think it's so neat too that this year they're honoring my grandfather and Will, you know, Eisner at the same time, because they worked together, they were great friends, and I think he would have been so honored himself to be recognized with Will. So I think it's great.
How many people in the room met Jack? How many people had, of those three people, is there anyone who didn't have the kind of experience Jeremy's describing with him? I mean, it was common. Everybody, he treated you, everybody like an equal. Or sometimes like you're even better than him.
Yeah.
And I remember that most of the time when he was physically able to, he would stand when he talked to you if you were standing. He'd be sitting, and you came up to talk to him, he would stand up to talk to you. Which he didn't have to do, but it was like simple courtesy to him. Tracy, what Can you expand on this? I mean, what do you tell? What story? Do you have a story you can tell people about Jack that makes them understand? Is there any? I don't even put you on the spot here, but it seems to me that you had.
I have one.
Lisa's got one. Tracy can pick
one. Do you want to think of one while I?
You go for it. Yeah, give you time for it.
Well, this happened at.
Get a little closer to the mic.
Okay. Because you know we talk about growing up and. Recognizing what your father did. Well, after a while, you know, you have people coming over and getting interviewed, or he was in the phone book, so you could call him up and people would call up, or they'd actually just show up and he'd, oh yeah, come on in. My mom would make sandwiches and they'd go to sit by the pool. But this one time, we used to tease him that he would just let, you know, these days you can't really obviously do that, but he would let anybody in. I mean, these people came, and I don't know what cult they were from. It was some UFO cult. And they wanted him to join and give up all his belongings and follow them to the desert. And he's like, come on in, we'll talk about it. Have cookies and milk. And they came in. And sure enough, needless to say, he didn't leave with them. And I can't remember the name of the cult because it was obviously a long time ago. But, yeah, we used to tease him that, yeah, Charlie Manson came to the door today. Come on in, you know. He didn't turn anybody down. He was so grateful to his fans and, you know, to do what he enjoyed doing the most. And he would have been very humble and grateful to be here. So it is fun. It's even fun for me to hear all these stories as well.
Tracy, you got something?
Got it now?
That was it.
Was that it? I told your story?
That's cool.
Oh, no.
There's so many great stories and memories. Actually, it's funny because a lot of us have the same, very similar story in regards to, you know, I've brought friends over to the house when I was, you know, getting into my teenage years. And it was funny because there was one friend who... knew the characters, didn't really know, you know, who my grandfather really was. And then I did not see my friend for about 2 hours. Like, he brought my friend through the halls and was talking about pictures. And actually, that friend actually now is a full-blown comic book Jack Kirby fan and collector of art and everything like that. So... it's a lot of fun. And I mean, personal stories, I just always remember one of my favorite times, and this happened a lot of times, is, you know, my favorite memories was, you know, I always loved the fact that he stayed up late at night. And so for me, when I got to spend the night at my grandparents' house, it was always a treat because I got to stay up late. And so I literally would just spend hours with him in his studio. You know, who knows if I was he would take time because I would watch him draw, and a lot of times he would let me draw on his desk. And of course, I am a horrible, horrible artist, unfortunately. But again, he was super nice, and he would say how great I was drawing this stick figure that was supposed to look like a superhero. And so I have really fond memories of just those evenings, you know, that just, it was, you know, quite a bit throughout the years.
You know, if I might real quick, just the respect the man had for other people, this is very minor, but I learned from this. Every time I would leave his house, he would always walk me to my car and make sure I got in and watch me drive down the street before he walked in the house. And to this day, I try to do this because I thought, you know, how many people do that? It's just, I know it sounds minor, but to me it was a big deal at the time.
But there were all these little local crazy. Actually, I think he walked you there to make sure you hadn't stolen it.
Darn it.
He was very gentlemanly. He always offered Steve Shinman and me coffee. We never drank coffee. We didn't want coffee, but he always had to offer coffee. And he had a very kindly attitude towards everyone. Jillian, did you go to D23 last week?
I did. I was at D23. As some of you may know, my grandfather received a Disney Legends Award at the Disney Legends Award ceremony, D23. And so my father, Neil, kind of ex- accepted the award on his behalf, and he gave like a speech and everything.
Neil gave a very classy, very, lovely speech. Yeah. If you have not been, it's on YouTube. Go search for D23 Curly. There's a wonderful film clip package about Jack, which does not mince any words or couch things about saying he's the co-creator of these characters. In fact, I feel Disney is even trying to be a little too loud with that to counteract all the previous words that left him out of the creatorship of these materials. I think they're really actively trying to do that. And Neil got up and gave a real classy speech. Perfect. I wish he could be here today because he's a bright, lovely man. I love Neil. He's just an amazing guy. This brings up a topic I want to talk about at this moment here. I'm so serious about this, I'm going to move to the podium and do this. All right. Thank you. Was anyone here? Was here a quick draw last year? Anybody here in the room? Okay. You remember what happened in the quick draw last year? We were doing this thing with Sergio Aragonis and Scott Shaw and another cartoonist whose name I'm blanking out.
Keith.
And the convention has a thing called the Icon Award. This is an award the convention has, its highest award. It gets it out there once a year to one person. And it is for a person whose work has transcended the original medium it was in. It's for a writer whose work became movies, or comic book artist whose work became movies, or novels, or video games, or a filmmaker whose work has transcended its form. I think earlier winners were like George Lucas and Steven Spielberg and Ray Bradbury. At one point, Stan Lee got it. Neil Gaiman got the award. It's a very big award. June Foray won it one year, and it's the most important. It's like the only award Jack never got. Now that he's a Disney legend, all those. But the problem is they don't give it to anyone who is deceased. You have to be alive to get this award. And I don't think that's right. And I think they should change the rules and give this award to Jack Kirby. Am I the only person who has to? When David Gamblanzer, who's the panels of promotions and publicity at the convention, came up on the stage and presented the award to Sergio. Sergio started, wasn't this a wonderful moment as you were there? Sergio was crying. It was a terrific, wonderful moment. I think the convention should change the rules and give this award to Jack Kirby. Now, if we can get this arranged, will the family come back for this ceremony if we do this? Lisa, Jillian, Tracy, you all come back and we do it?
Yes,
okay,
sure.
We're going to save you the trouble. Ladies and gentlemen, here's David Glanzer from the convention staff.
Until I began working with came across copies of a series of pencil sketches that Jack had done as a demonstration about that importance. All pencil sketches were of the same image, but it is a testament to Jack Kirby that he used those sketches as a teaching tool. The interesting aspect of those sketches is how they were transformed when inked by different artists. The original sketch, as you can all imagine, was impressive enough. But the finished examples of each took on a life of their own. The same image told different stories depending upon the thickness of lines, shading, lack of, or excess of ink. For the first time I really understood the art of comics. It's opened a whole new world for me. And it was great that Jack taught me, even after he had passed away, the importance and nuance of comics and comic art. Jack Kirby's impact on the comics industry is monumental. Jack Kirby's impact on Comic-Con is equally so. One of our first guests, he remained one of our truest friends, and he even predicted the growth and success of what was at the time a tiny little fan-run show. For all this and so much more, I am proud to say that for the first time, Comic-Con International will present the Icon Award posthumously. This year's recipient is Jack Kirby.
So So it's humbling to me to see all of you here in this panel showing the support that you have. So thank you all so much for being here. And thanks again to the convention as well. This is amazing.
And it bothered me for years and years and years that he was not getting the recognition he deserved. And I think I told the story on the panels before, how I walked out of the X-Men movie angry at how small his credit was. I sat there after everybody had left the theater. I was determined to sit there until Jack's name came on the screen and they're cleaning up the popcorn boxes around me. And I'm sitting in the theater and finally got like the last name on there, and it was like smaller than the caterers. And I was angry about that, and I've been angry about it for years and upset. And the last couple of years, this has all turned around. Now it is not a matter of telling people that Jack, how important Jack was. It's a matter of letting it propagate down and letting it trickle down and the new dynamic make the old one passe. Because now Jack is recognized as the full co-creator of all those Marvel heroes and the full creator of all his DC heroes. And co-creator of all the stuff he did with Joe Simon. It's an immense body of work. And Jack wanted two things in his life. He wanted financial security for his family, and he wanted recognition for his work. And he's got the recognition now. We just have to now accept it instead of fighting it like the underdogs. We have to accept that Jack Kirby's recognition has finally reached the stage it should have, and it's only going to grow from here. And the people up here, the family and friends, people, I felt close to the Kirby family the minute I started working with Jack. Not after over a period of time, like the second day, because they accepted me like that. And I am so happy about this. And this award, this is the last one we can give him, folks. It's the last award he didn't have. And I'm very happy about that. And thank you all for coming to this. We're having the usual Jack Kirby tribute panel on Sunday. We've got some surprises planned for that also. Please be there for that, because we're going to be talking about all the stuff of Jack that's going on now, and there's a lot of it. Thank you very much.